maybe it was like a learned behavior, like, oh, this dude, like, he's got a stick, I got a ball. Like, you know what I mean? Him stick, me ball. Like, okay, let's collab.
Let's collab.
And then, like, they saw, like, the other, you know, like, the other people that didn't collab, like, they didn't, you know, adapt, right? So, you know, they adapt or die. Our theme of 2021.
Yeah. Like right now, I'm taking a spoonful of peanut butter.
Walk us through this.
Now pour. All right. So I open the peanut butter. I take my spoon. I put it in there, like get it like halfway full, but not like, I don't want like a heaping spoonful. There's a lot of fat in there. And then I pour a little bit of maple syrup on the spoon with it. And then it's just like that. You just down it.
Interesting.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Huh. It's so good, bro.
Interesting. Try with like some chips. I mean, I've never had the maple.
With chips?
I never had the maple syrup upgrade, but yeah, just peanut butter and chips. Like tortilla chips. Because you get you get salt and sweet, you know?
Where's the sweet from?
The peanut butter.
The peanut butter is sweet?
Yeah.
Isn't the peanut butter the salt?
No, the chip is.
Oh, so you get, like, the sweet peanut butter, the stuff with, like, sugar added.
I just get regular. I don't know. I guess maybe it's not sweet. I don't know. It's just cream. What flavor is peanut butter? I don't know.
I'd say it's sweet and salty.
Sweet and salty?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I get unsalted peanut butter.
Same.
Unsalted peanut butter.
Are y'all creamy or crunchy?
Yeah, there is.
Are y'all creamy or crunchy?
Creamy.
Same.
I mean, I like eat the crunchy too. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not a racist.
Discriminate.
I'm not a racist. It's just so you know.
I feel like I shouldn't have to clarify, but I'm just going to clarify. I'm not racist.
Yo, the key to food is diversity anyways. You know, if you got like soft bread and you got a creamy peanut butter, it's kind of like, it can't be too soft also, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to switch it up with crunch or like a toast.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I see where you're going. You need a mix of textures.
It's a texture flavor. Thing, right? Yeah, for sure.
Correct.
Yeah.
You got to diversify. I think that's a...
Ooh, nice. I see the transition. I see the transition.
Feel me?
Damn, that only comes... you only get to that level with years. With years of experience. You only get to that level. He just transitioned us from peanut butter to investing with one word. Wow. Damn. I'm humbled, bro. I'm honored. I'm just honored to be a part of it. Yeah.
The Oracle speaks.
I'm telling you, bro, you would kill the game on Clubhouse. You would kill it, bro. Yep.
What is the game on Clubhouse?
Bro, the game is literally facilitating conversations. That's the app. It's community building. Like,
pretty crazy.
I go on Clubhouse. The feed is a list of different conversations with how many people are currently in those conversations. And the list is like what the topic is and how many people are in it, right? And I can just scroll through whatever topics I'm interested in and see what conversations are going on and join whatever ones I want to in the background. And then if I want to participate, I can raise my hand, whatever. And there's people moderating each one. Uh-huh. And, it'll pick. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like today, Bezos steps down from Amazon as CEO.
Right.
And I immediately go in Clubhouse and there's a full like 1,000-person room moderated by like these 10 people who are experts in different fields or whatever, just talking about like what the implications are and then people are chiming in, asking questions or whatever. And it's like such a fast way to learn. And people who are good at moderating, keeping people involved, like knowing the right questions to answer or ask, they just do really well. Like facilitating is actually a valid skill set for social media all of a sudden, you know? It's really cool.
That is what's up. Shout out to Clubhouse.
Yeah, bro.
Okay. Yeah, I got to read into this more.
It's going to be big. Well, it is big already.
Did you guys hear, I think it was like yesterday or 2 days ago, they were interviewing Elon Musk. And he was actually talking to the CEO of Robinhood, Vlad Tenev, and he was kind of like grilling him. He's like, oh, yeah. Really? These people hostage. I didn't listen to the full thing. I'd like to, because I'm interested in Elon. I think he's an interesting character.
He's awesome, man. I still think, I was literally thinking about that this afternoon. Elon releasing the patents to all of Tesla's technology and making them public for anyone to use is like the single most badass thing anyone's ever done in business, I think.
Did he do that?
Yeah.
He did that.
Wow.
And now he's the richest? All is he the richest?
And this was years ago. He said, because what he said is, he's like, I care more about this technology becoming like prevalent and the impact it's going to have on our environment than I do about it being us who makes it. So if someone else can do it better, all power to them, we'll release the patents. It's all you.
It's like open source, like what, like Tesla or like SpaceX?
Tesla.
So all Tesla, the battery technology, all the like charging, everything they had, he released it and made it public. So anyone can use it without any legal issue. It's like it's like when you go to play basketball, go play someone one-on-one, and you're like, no, you start with the ball, let's go. You know?
Yeah.
Because it was like, he's like, I don't care, I don't need any advantage. We're gonna out execute you.
Wow.
You know? It's so badass.
He let his nuts swing like that.
And seriously, he just whipped his dick out and set it on the table.
That is nuts, hang.
He really did. Cool. So Elon's a cool character, man. We need people like that.
Yeah. And like, dude, he has so much pull in our like life right now. Like he'll say like game stonk and like, you know, it'll shoot up or whatever. He'll put like Bitcoin in his profile and it'll shoot up like thousands of dollars. It's like crazy, his like the gravity of who he is. But
yeah, man.
Pablo was telling me about how like he's a dick to his employees, or like, I don't know, he's just telling me about how evil he is. I really don't know too much about Elon, to be honest, but I don't know any of that.
Yeah, I mean, to each their own, right? Like different people have different approaches. No one who works with him. Yes.
Oh, he is.
He's a dick in the sense that like this dude works. He's one of those like workaholics and has massive expectations for everyone around him and will not accept anything less than what he expects. And so like he wants the Tesla Model S ready yesterday, you know? And so everything short of that is a disappointment and people are getting sort of dressed down and, you know. And so, but like my point is like no one who's working at Tesla or SpaceX or wherever in any top level function has to be there. They all got good jobs, money, qualifications. They can go somewhere else. Right. They want to be there because he's like a real OG leader and is trying to do meaningful shit and not just like make a new flavor of Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
You know?
Interesting. Do you think that's like a necessary like characteristic of like people in business? Like you really need to like fuck some people over to be at the top? No,
I don't. I personally don't. I think it's not surprising that it's somewhat common because, you know, any strength, like for example, any strength is like a double-edged sword, like people say, right? Like the ability to focus also means that you're not focusing on other things, right? Any strength is like that. And so I think it's not surprising that people who have like supreme intellect are sometimes assholes, you know? But I don't think it's a necessary condition. I think there's just people who lead in different ways. And I think the way that he leads is from a place of like extreme vision and intelligence rather than like hearts and minds.
Oh, fuck.
But Steve Jobs had the same reputation, man.
Right. Exactly.
What's the role of what's the role of fame in leadership?
Like, okay, hold on. Do you mean like that? How does it affect your ability to lead being famous?
Yeah, sure. I would say so. Yeah, that's a good way to interpret it. What is it?
I'd say fame probably adds leverage if you're in a leadership position. You know, same way having a million followers instead of 1,000 adds leverage.
Right.
Probably makes it harder in some ways too, you know. Like everything you say has way more weight on it, so you really can't fuck up. Mm-hmm. Like if he says the wrong thing, like Tesla's stock could plummet. And that affects all of his employees with stock options and everything, you know?
Yeah.
So high responsibility also. Higher responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if he, like, Elon actually wants to be famous.
It's hard to know. He doesn't seem
like an attention whore, you know? Like, I feel like he just trolls. Like, he's just like a nerdy guy. That, like, just like he'll just say dumb shit to troll people and, like, you know, get a kick out of it.
Yeah. He's definitely more of a nerdy troll than anything else on steroids, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's his true personality. He's super nerdy. He definitely likes to troll people. And then he just is on steroids because he's been so successful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Interesting fella.
Well, when I was thinking about this, when we were going to have this conversation, something that came to mind was basically this, like leverage, which ultimately is power. And we were talking about how Elon has the power to swing Bitcoin by just putting it on his profile picture, right? Mm-hmm. So... now let's think about GME. What was the story about the power in GME from what you guys saw?
I mean, for me, the power story was definitely a story of like collaboration of many not super powerful people. Can be much more substantial than we've ever seen before in the financial arena. That felt, for me, that was the key power dynamic and the reason it captured so many people's imagination.
It was like crowdsourcing power.
Yeah.
But at the highest level.
Yeah.
Decentralized.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. It's like collaboration on a level that could only occur because of the level of technology we have now, you know? Like there's some, you guys have both read at least parts of Sapiens, right? And like he talks about, you've all know Harari talks about like collaboration is one of the key things that made Homo sapiens successful, is the ability to like collaborate in larger groups and structures and hierarchies in the way that like chimps couldn't.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's funny because like that same attribute is the same thing behind GameStop. It's just now enabled to an even greater degree because of the internet.
Interesting. So do you remember why people were able to collaborate versus chimpanzees?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's some sort of like brain development or language or what it is that allowed us to, but it's definitely the case, like, you know, as much as we don't necessarily like hierarchies and systems like that, if you're able to put a hierarchy in place, some sort of organization system, you know, you could easily organize like 100 people around a certain task or goal, you know, like not that difficult for us to do. Mm-hmm. But like what, you know, like what animal or species that we would have been competing with could have done that? Like organize themselves, discuss a strategy, you know, we're going to attack from this side, you attack from that side, you know?
Maybe it was like a learned behavior, like, oh, this dude, like, he's got a stick, I got a ball. Like, you know what I mean? Him stick, me ball. Like, okay,
let's collab. Let's collab.
And then, like, they saw, like, the other, you know, like, the other people that didn't collab, like, they didn't, you know, adapt, right? So, you know, they adapt or die, our theme of 2021.
Yeah. For sure. It could have been an extension of language, too. Like, if we developed a more sophisticated language, like, language is definitely a key technology for enabling collaboration, you know?
So that's what I was going to say, is my interpretation from the book is he started that by talking about story, the power of story. And really, it's all story. All of these things are stories that create the structure, which has the positives, like this GME stock that made kids money, that made people money, made us money, right? Our people.
Wait, it made you money?
I
didn't make money on it.
proverbially, I feel like I'm with y'all, you know what I mean? In my heart and soul,
I'm part of
the generation, I'm part of the crew, you know? Fighting the fight.
Right.
When we come up, that's a good thing. What I was saying about the story is like it was really just ultimately a story. Actually, was it just a story because it was facts for GME, right?
It was facts too. Yeah.
So it can't just be like, sometimes it can be a made up story, right? As we just said, Elon puts the Bitcoin on his profile picture.
Right.
The stock rises, right? Someone writes a tweet, the stock rises.
But it was still the story that enabled the collaboration, because it's like,
oh yeah.
For example, the fundamentals like were there. So there was some element of truth. Just like go back a million years, and it's like, yeah, it's true that there was like an animal they were hunting or that they killed, you know. But the story was still like, you know, take from the rich. You know, burn the ivory towers. That was still the story that motivated everyone to actually collaborate and take the action.
Right.
The fundamentals alone didn't inspire people, you know. Like, if everyone who ended up buying it was just shown a chart that showed exactly the numbers and nothing else, it wouldn't have enabled the collaboration. It was because someone put the messaging around it of, you know, we're going to kill these hedge funds, you know. So it still was the story, you know.
It was
for sure.
Everybody got caught up, as you said. It was the mainstream media. It was in the mainstream media.
But that was like the CNBC like hedge fund argument, like about the fundamentals. Like, why, you know, there's no way that this stock is worth this much. How are you going to tell me that this stock is worth this much based on like this, and that? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think like they really discounted the narrative and the story, but they were really trying to drive home that point that, like, you know, they were obviously taking the one side or whatever. It was so one-sided, because I remember like watching CNBC like all day, all week, and they were, you know, talking it down and just talking shit about it or whatever. And then like they would bring a guest on and they're like, you know, is this illegal? And like, how can we stop this or whatever? And then the guests would be like, nah, it's not, you can't do anything. You know what I mean? So like, I feel like every guest they brought on kind of had this like contrarian take, you know? And, you know, some of the guys like Chamath or like Mark Cuban would take it a step further, you know, for the little guys. Yeah. It was definitely David versus Goliath was the story.
It's funny because like now in a way the stock market just behaves like our normal markets. Like, for example, over time, goods that are more expensive to make and produce will generally be a higher value or cost more to consumers, right? Mm-hmm. Like generally mm-hmm. over time, a Tesla is going to cost more than a Ford. But like shit, there's exceptions all the time. Like y'all remember like Furbies, you know,
Arby's.
Like how much did those cost to make? Like the little toys, like probably $1, $2, $3, right? Mm-hmm. Like, or any number of trends, if something blows up and for 6 months or a year or 2 years, people are paying whatever for them, which is way more than they're worth. Over time, shit like that's going to be worthless, you know? But that's how the markets have always been outside of stocks, you know? It's like some random shit will get trendy, and it doesn't matter how much it actually costs or what the actual value is. It's just all sort of trendy, so...
Again, it's story. Like it's
a story. It's supreme.
Right. The shoe is just a shoe, but like this shoe is made by Travis Scott. All right, so then let's make it 10x. Exactly. Or like Kanye wore this. Kanye wore this. Like you know this North Face jacket. Okay, now everybody wants this North Face jacket.
Yep,
that's the pull that they have.
So does it all come down to the power?
Same shit in stocks.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a question of power dynamics, but it's a question of who has it now. Because it's like, you could have said, well, Travis Scott, Kanye West, whoever else had all the power for like trends in the normal markets of goods and whatever. Mm-hmm. And up until now, it never felt like we had a power to set the trend. You know, we just had to figure out what trend was happening and then try and ride it.
Right.
As far as the financial markets are concerned, like, okay, what stock's moving? And then let's jump on it. Whereas the hedge funds are actually able to move the stock.
Exactly.
You know, because the volume, you know.
Okay, so I want to go back to what Ricky started to say, which was how CNBC was kind of to push back, how the mainstream media was showing one side of the story, which leads into my overall just perspective, which may not all be factual, but I feel like is a little bit factual, that the... Man pushed back that Goliath pushed back on David. So I just want your guys' opinion on that side of it. Like what does that say about the power balance, I guess, in society? What does GME say about the power balance?
Man, I mean, it definitely says the power is still where we thought it was. You know, in terms of if you're fucking running a hedge fund, you have more power than I do. And that's not going to change. But I think it was also a rallying cry of like, but hey, remember, like, even if you're not that guy, if you have the power to like gather people, collaborate, tell a compelling story to get people behind you and with you on something, you actually can rival that power, at least for a time, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Maybe it was like a check on their power, which definitely shook their boots. Nice. I agree. Like they came and they swung like a motherfucker. They reminded, they spent all week reminding you like who has the power. So, but it's kind of like the whole like MAGA thing, like, you know, like they think like this, that it's just the beginning, like, you know, this is like not going to stop, you know, this like decentralized like mindset of, you know, we're going to crowd it, whatever, this stock or whatever, like these people aren't going anywhere. I don't know. Maybe people learn a lesson. Maybe they don't. I don't know.
So it was so fascinating to see this cut across party lines.
Yeah.
That was so crazy.
Definitely taking sides. Yeah.
Yeah. I had like MAGA friends who were like, yo, this is so messed up. Now watch the hedge fund come back. And like, you know, they're always trying to screw the little guy. Like I was like, whoa, this is a trip. Yeah. Like a whole different.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching like Fox Business and like, you know, I think Tucker Carlson, he had like a really good like bit. And then like, it's just, really interesting to see like, and even like the celebrities, like they had like
fucking Ja Rule on CNBC for his take.
What?
What his opinion was about this.
Ja Rule was on what? What news network?
He was on CNBC like yesterday, and they're asking
him about, Firefest.
No.
Wow.
They were like, what did you mean when you were saying hold the line? And he was like, oh yeah, I feel like, you know, we were in battle and like, you know, I didn't mean like you should hold on to it forever or whatever.
Are you serious?
So yeah, dumb. You gotta watch it.
Wow.
Oh my god.
This is, you know, it's funny like that you bring up MAGA, and it's been like almost 45 minutes and we haven't said Trump once. And I say that because motherfucker, he is out of the news. And now
it's so great.
Everything's calmer, right? Like, everything's so much more calm. We don't care about what's happening in the government again. Like, holy shit. That is
it is a whole different thing. Yeah. I just had that moment the other day too, where I was like, dude, do you realize like we haven't had to talk about that in like weeks? It's a whole different world we're living in now.
Nobody's really watching the news as much. Oh shit.
I think like that's how like 2020 went, and like it's kind of spilling over. It's just like every week there's a new narrative, you know what I mean? And it would like swing back and forth, like a war, a wildfire, a Kobe, and then Trump's comes back in or whatever. And then like
it's crazy
coronavirus, and then like this, you know, riot and protests, and then like Trump comes back in.
And it's like hard to separate whether this is our reality is just that much crazier over the last 16 months.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or is it like this is just how media and culture works now? Is it like one panic fest to the next? You know?
No, was it
and
like
we just don't have
was
enough like perspective
this?
Yet.
I don't know. I can't before January.
No, I can't remember it. I don't think we're gonna be able to tell until we're like on the other side of it looking backwards.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You know, for example, like what if 2022 and 2023 are just like super tame years? Then we'll be like, oh shit, do you remember 2020 and shit?
Yeah, that. Wow.
We're fucking.
But we won't know until we get to something else, you know?
Yeah. Maybe it's just like magnified, you know, because everybody's at home or, you know what I mean? Or like,
that's probably.
Everybody
true.
Has this like, you know, before everybody was kind of concerned. There would be things that would pop up in the news, but like, you know, people would be concerned with their lives and there's, you know, I'm not paying attention
right.
to shit. You know what I mean? But like, we all have this shared like pandemic, you know what I mean? We're all in this like same thing together. So it's just like one thing's on fire. We feel like everything's on fire. You know what I mean? Like it's on fire for all of us or whatever.
Well, that's also a consequence of information. I don't know why I'm making it sound so negative. I am taking a negative take on it. I guess that's why. Like the consequence of this huge highway of information is like literally everything is on, you know, high alert or
yeah no that's right.
From the tops of the towers or whatever fucking metaphor.
Yeah. Everybody's like, you know, everybody takes a side.
Mm-hmm.
Now more than ever for every issue, right?
What would happen if all the major media outlets had to shut down for 2 months? Like, on the other side of that 2 months, are we in a happier world?
Hell no. 2 months? Hell no. We need, like, 2 millennia, bro. We need a long-ass time to evolve. 2 millennia or 2 grams of mushroom each in 2 months for 2 months.
But I'm not even saying evolve. I'm just saying like if everybody was on a media fast for 2 months, that's enough time to like really change your habits and like the way you think a little bit, you know.
It would I agree.
I'm just curious, like, because the hypothesis is if we all believe that that's true, then it like really does make the argument that, as much as I hate doing blanket statements like that, it makes the argument that media is really creating a lot of divisiveness.
Yeah.
And and sort of panic.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys saying like no media at all, or like, because I feel like if there was no major media, like people would resort to like Twitter and like, you know what I mean? Like social media for news, like they kind of do now.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what's interesting is like how much of the news that's on there is still filtered through like NBC, CNN, whatever, Fox, you know.
I mean, there's some.
Social media. Where does the news come from?
In social media? Yeah. Like some.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like highly. Like
where does the news of Bezos stepping down come from, right? Like it comes from him talking to a journalist, journalist posting an article, that article getting shared a billion times on social.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm just curious if you pull out the roots of all that stuff and there's no one getting a chance to spin it that has a huge platform like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Someone will fill the void. Someone will fill the void. QAnon. What is this new one? This new America, whatever the fucking One America News Network.
Newsmax.
Right? Newsmax.
Newsmax, One America.
Damn, I didn't know TJ Maxx had a TV station, though.
I personally think it would be good. Now, here's why I said 2 millennia jokingly, because I think when you take away all the media, what you really have is just yourself. And yourself is full of a lot of shit that you don't want to face. And that's one, I think, one reason why a lot of people want to be just like consuming other things. Honestly, it's easier. Mm-hmm. It's easier. It's just easier. And it's more comfortable. Yeah. It makes you happy for that moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or at least distracted, right?
Correct.
For sure. For sure. It's just like how people watch like, you know, drama or, you know, like reality TV or whatever. Yes. They're just like, you know, because like, it kind of takes them away from their own troubles. And like, you know, one part of it would be like watching some dysfunctional shit, you know, and be like, oh, okay, so maybe my life isn't that bad. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or yeah, like the fantasy world, like, oh man, this, you know, this person's life is like great. I can like live in their light, in their eyes for this 1.5 hours or whatever.
For sure. Imagine that world. Escapism. Story. Yeah.
Escapism.
What, and there's plenty of ways for that. That's the thing. Like the proliferation of tech and everything has made that, like, distraction is the most easy thing to access now. You know, it's easy, for sure, easier than ever. I'm curious, like, because there's definitely a link with, like, how happy you are, I think, to how much you rely on escapism to get you through. I'm wondering, like, in your guys' minds, what percentage of people you know do you think are truly happy?
Like, happy in none. Like what sense?
none percent. Damn. None percent.
F percent, bro.
Wow, 9%. Man, that's crazy. That's so crazy, right? Because like, if that's true, then like, no wonder we're all so victim to like whatever the media puts out to distract us. You know, like, because if you're not happy in your life, then you'll look for things to distract you from it. And so, whatever is most available, you'll go for.
Exactly. So let me transition one last time back to GME. Because I think this is the scary part. This is the scary part of it, is like the people who, how do you say it, Ricky? Like, who are left holding the bag? Is that how you say it?
Bag holders? Yeah, essentially.
Bag holders. Put them bags on your head, bag holders. no, but that's the dangerous part. So for me, I have a Fidelity account, right? I'm seeing this shit. I'm reading it's from the messages from you guys that's get me started, because I don't follow that Reddit. And I'm not, okay, anyways. So I'm like, fuck, should I, you know, I have a couple thousand just in a bank account right now that I'm going to use it to pay off something. But if I put in the market for a couple days, watch it grow, why not? And I'm like, okay, shit. So I got to remember my password and okay, how do I even link my bank account? And I started doing all this shit and I'm like, oh, I got work in 20 minutes. Is this something that I'm going to be really committing myself to? And so I said, no,
good job.
And
good.
So I think it's just like a perspective to have, like, yeah, this, it is, as I said, it's a great thing for all the people that made, that we made money with, right? The little people. Mm-hmm. And that's all great, but it's still ultimately the story that's kind of driving you, right? Like, you guys definitely are not just purely story driven. Ricky's out here studying charts and shit. Mick is talking about the long game. So I think it's just like those people who, like you said, like maybe just hit you up real quick just because of this, or just are hopping into this, that you got to be careful, you know?
So what's,
I like the one chair idea. I like the one chair idea.
Yeah.
One chair.
That's my, yeah. Just to have some skin in the game, see what happens.
Yeah. I like that.
Oh, one chair. Yeah. I don't know what you said. One chair. I don't know.
one chair for each chair. I can only fit 50 chairs in my house.
No. That is a new thing that, like, is in the stock world, is like, you know, so there's like fundamental analysis, technical analysis, and then there's like momentum trading. It's just really just riding the pump, you know what I mean? Or like riding,
right,
following the volume, which is like, I don't know, maybe it wasn't there before.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, a huge factor is what Robinhood did, right? Because when I started in the stock market in 2012 or 13, whatever it was, it cost $6.95 per trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On my Schwab account. And so it's like, I had to be extremely strategic, you know, it's like, okay, one bulk buy, you know, and if I'm going to buy more, it needs to be like a quarter, like maybe one order per like quarter of the year. And I don't want to, like, that level of commissions, you can cut to your profits like really easily.
Right.
And then now all the platforms I trade on have zero commissions because Robinhood disrupted commissions.
Yeah. We definitely do.
They changed the game completely. We would still be paying $7-6 a trade if it weren't for Robinhood.
Mm-hmm. They forced every other brokerage's hand.
Yep. Then Schwab ended up going fee free. That was such a great moment when that happened. I was so happy. It was such a cool thing to see because they caused it. So we definitely, like you said, Rico, we owe them that. And that's what made it possible for like me to be like on a random Monday or Friday, whenever it was, be like, all right, I'm just gonna buy one each of these and see what the heck happens. I would have never done that if I had to pay $7 every time I made a buy, right?
Right.
But now it's free. So it opens all that up.
That's true. So then will it hit 1,000?
I hope so. Shit.
Hope so, yeah. I mean,
I have to say, I definitely would not stake a lot of money on it, which is why I'm not, you know.
Why not?
I know there's a lot of smart people who think so, but I've learned long ago that this shit is too complex to know anything. So you only can play odds. Like, you know, what's super likely to happen is way better to invest in than what might or might not happen. And for me, based on what I know, this is no better than it could happen. And it's probably more like it probably won't happen, you know?
Yeah.
And so like investing in that's just not a smart choice.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's like taking a fadeaway three pointer when there's a layup nearby, you know, like the lane's wide open. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like you could hit it. It's possible. It'd be cool if you did, but you probably won't, you know?
Why do the people think it will go up to 1,000? Because the hedge funds are closed.
I think, yeah, they're looking at the amount of shorts that are still out there. And when the contract dates are and the potential volume that could come in still. Once Robinhood and all them release stuff. Yeah.
I think 1,000 is just like an arbitrary number. Like they just, you know, it's a totally nice whole number.
To the moon. But
I guess the moon is 1,000.
This thing was trading at 17 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You cannot, under any circumstances, think there's at all a high probability of it going to 1,000. That makes literally no sense. There's no,
yeah,
right? There's no historical data that could get you there. So it's purely speculative. And extremely high risk, and it's fine if you acknowledge that it's super high risk and you're doing it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you should never think that it's anything less than high risk just because a lot of people are really excited or confident. You know, that's the risk of the sort of retail investing, bad investing.
That is like a pillar of momentum trading is like, you know, accepting the risk level. Like, you know, sometimes I will see something, you know, climb up and I'll just hop on the rocket, but you just gotta be, you know, you gotta get off early and like, you know, you might be leaving money on the table, but like at the end of the day, like nobody's complaining about profits because like every, you know, what goes up must come down. So it's just, it's come crashing down.
Yep. I've definitely been in stocks that went out, like went to zero a couple of times. And so like, that's part of why, John, your decision to not buy is such a good decision, because it's like, if you're going to play this game, you really need to be able to allocate the time to pay attention to it and do it, mm-hmm. give it its justice, you know, mm-hmm. Because in a day or in a matter of hours, the stock can, things are so volatile, they can fluctuate so much that in the course of you being on a 2-hour conference call, you could have lost the whole position and not had time to trade out, you know, like there's so much shit that can go on. That if you're not able to give it its due, it's just not smart.
Right.
That's my opinion, you know.
No, I feel you. And what is it, by the way? What is it, like the financial markets? What is that? What story is that?
Is what?
The financial markets. Like, what is that? What is it? Is that too deep?
What is
the? Am I too high?
What is the financial market?
Yeah, like what is that? What are the stories that drive that? Going back to the stories thing.
Oh.
Is it really just paper? Is it dollars? You know what I mean?
I think it's just greed, to be honest. It's greed.
So the financial markets is just a market where greed is traded? Is that what you're saying? Greed is won and lost? Hope is won and lost, so. Right? That's the double-edged sword, I guess.
You can
have hope for better life, better, you know,
affording. I guess you can lose your greed when you're bag holding. I think, you know, they always say like you have to take emotions out of trading, or else you'll get burned, because you know some people will like lose on a trade and they'll like revenge trade and or they'll like, you know what I mean, or they'll catch FOMO or whatever.
Yeah,
but I definitely think that like emotions play a part of it. Like you definitely have to like temper your emotions, but at the same time, like sometimes like trusting your gut just works out in the end. Like
how do you know when
when you don't, you know, you don't enter into a trade and it takes off on you. And you feel that FOMO?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was more asking like, when do you choose one or the other?
When do you choose what?
Between like trusting your gut and the other one you said that I can't remember right now. Okay, never mind. What else were you gonna say?
I don't know. I'm about to smoke this pipe real quick.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's an emotional game.
could say.
Ah, yes, the emotions. That's what I was going to ask about. Like, okay, so you said trusting your gut, which is basically trusting your emotions, right? And not being too emotional. Right. So how do you know
you just don't let it, you just don't let it like take over your decision making, you know what I mean? Because like even in like in a real world case, right, like, you know, you might feel strongly about something happening or whatever, but like you act on it and like you get killed, you know what I mean?
Right. Damn, just another example of the world. I think the one thing that I loved the most from this was I think you posted in the chat, Ricky, is something about the battleground or the new battleground, basically where war is happening, the financial war between classes. That's dope, man. I mean, it is a war. It is a class war that played out in the financial markets 100,000%. Like GameStop as a company did not add or take away any value to the world before this happened. Then they helped make, you know, kids a bunch of money, and maybe their employees, maybe their employees had some stocks that they cashed out on. Like that could have been awesome too. But yeah, it's just so crazy. Like something that adds no value has such like an insane impact. And even as I'm saying that, like I have to take those words back because that impact is the value. But it's like it comes from. It's so almost ambiguous. You can't just say it comes from one thing. You know what I mean? It's like the world is kind of creating it in a sense, it's witchcraft, bro. It's witchcraft.
It's just like, I feel like these things play out in multiple, you know, different arenas, right?
Right.
These class wars and this pushback and, you know, this push and pull. It's interesting. And then like, just so happened that last week, it just played out in like my world.
Right.
You know, next week, we'll see.